Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, Cardozo, was written by Joseph Mindell and was based in part on the book Benjamin N. Cardozo by George S. Hellman.
His name was Benjamin Nathan Cardozo. I never saw him, but I know that his hair was white, and his eyes were deep and wide and gentle, and that gentleness was in his voice and manner. I never saw him, nor did I hear him speak, but these things I know. And I think he might have said the words written long ago by Spinoza.
I have labored carefully not to mock, lament, or execrate the actions of men. I have endeavored to understand them.
The Court of Appeals of the State of New York, Chief Judge Cardozo presiding.
Counselor, the court already knows there is a dispute between your client, the employer, and four of his employees. We would like to know the facts of the case.
The case involves a clear breach of contract resulting in hardship and financial loss on the part of my client.
Counselor.
Your Honor.
The facts.
Four women, waitresses in my client's shop, agreed when they were hired not to join the union. Nevertheless, they did and proceeded to picket the shop.
Why?
Why? With all respect, may I say that I'm a lawyer, not a psychologist?
Counselor, what pay did the waitresses receive?
Your Honor, this is a case of breach of contract. The law involved is clear.
I am thinking of the human beings involved. What was the pay?
$8.
Do you mean to say...
I protest that this is a revel.
Is the court to
understand... The courts deal with questions of law. The courts are not concerned with psychology or economics or the details of the relationship between...
Counselor, when the court and counsel wish to speak at the same time, it does seem to me that the court should have precedence.
No, I ask the court's pardon.
Now, are we to understand that today, in the year 1927, women receive $8 for a week's work?
I must repeat that this is irrelevant. The courts are concerned with questions of law.
Counselor, it seems to be necessary to remind you that the law is concerned with people. The court reserves decision.
Cardozo, as far as I can see, there is only one decision we can make.
I think so too, Lane, but I'm not sure that we have the same decision in mind.
The women agreed not to join the union and then broke the agreement. They have no right to picket.
You sound so certain.
Of course. I know the law, and so do you.
Lane, the older I grow, the less certain I become that I'm right about anything.
You will excuse me for saying it, Cardozo, but this sounds like philosophical quibbling. The law is clear.
Isn't it also the law that workers have the right to join a union and the right to picket peacefully?
Yes,
consider the facts, Lane. One single fact. $8 a week. Lane, can you swallow that fact?
Thank you.
There are judges whose glory lies in their dissenting opinions. Cardozo's life was not a dissent, but an affirmation. The law is concerned with people, he said, and I wondered why he said it. Maybe it was because the bench on which he sat was not so high nor so distant as to remove him from humanity. One day, as he waited online at the public library, a friend saw him.
Ben, what in the world are you doing in this line, Ben?
What should I be doing here, Philip?
Six, seven, eight.
What are you doing?
Counting the people ahead of you in line. Be at least 20 minutes before you get your books.
Yes, I suppose that's about right.
Ben, I'll tell you something. When I want some books, I go to the chief librarian's office and have them brought there.
Oh, do you?
I do. You disapprove?
Oh, I didn't say that. I prefer to wait.
Oh, don't be stubborn. Come with me to the office.
No, Philip.
Well, have it your way, Ben. But it seems to me that the time of the chief judge of the Court of Appeals is too valuable.
Oh, I don't know about that. I'll wait my turn, like any other citizen.
You're late, Ben.
I'm sorry, Nell. I was delayed at the library.
Well, there's a young man waiting to interview you for his college law journal.
Oh, Nell, I wish you could send him away. Tell him anything.
I'm your sister, Ben, not your secretary. Tell him yourself. But remember, you're not just Ben Cardozo, you know.
That's all I ever want to be, especially in my own home. I talk like an adolescent.
Well, Ben?
All right. Ask the boy to come in. Only now...
Yes?
I'm a little frightened of these young men. They know such a terrifying amount of law.
You'll manage. Come in, young man.
Thank you, ma'am.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I think that was intended for me.
For you?
Never mind. Now, what would you like me to tell you?
I'm not sure. Something about your life, your career?
Well, there's nothing very interesting about me.
Well, a lot of people don't agree with you, Judge Cardozo. They want to know what you do, what kind of person you are.
Well, that's easy. Just write that I'm a mere plodding mediocrity.
Oh, you're making fun of me.
Oh, not at all. It's true. But notice I said plodding. A mere mediocrity can't go far, but a plodding one can go quite a distance.
Never went so far that he cut himself off from the roots of his existence. For 2.5 centuries, the history of his family had been a part of the history of America. He was an American, one of 100 million, and he drew strength from the relationship of one to many. He was a Jew, and all his life he retained membership in the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue of New York. But when he was asked by Rabbi Stephen Wise, then president of the Jewish Institute of Religion, to give the commencement address at the Institute, he was hesitant.
Rabbi Wise, I would like to do it, but I'm afraid.
Why should you, of all people, be afraid, Judge Cardozo?
A judge deals with the affairs of the marketplace. What can I say to young men who have dedicated themselves to the rabbinate?
I think you will know what to say.
I've thought a great deal about religion, Rabbi. I suppose I can hardly be called a religious man.
Let me quote the Talmud to you. He who would be pious must respect the rights of his fellows. Judge Cardozo, I have been in your courtroom. I have read what you have written. By my definition of religion, I would feel honored to join your congregation.
You're a stubborn man, Rabbi Wise.
No, I simply know what I want.
Tell me, what do you want?
I want you to talk about the things to which you are dedicated.
Respected the rights of his fellows.
and studied the laws of economics. For if the law is concerned with people, then nothing human is foreign to the law, and a judge is only trying to understand. He could not see how unusual this was. He was continually surprised that people knew of him and that strangers wrote him letters.
Listen, Nell, here's a letter from a man who has heard that I am a liberal judge.
Well, you are, aren't you, Ben?
If that's the case, he goes on, will I please send him $10? And here's one from a woman who wants to marry me.
Oh, is that so funny?
Well, after all, Nell, at my age...
Ben, there's something I've wanted to ask you for a long time.
What is it?
Ben, why have you never married?
Well, maybe nobody would have me.
Is that the reason?
Nell, what's the good of reasons afterwards?
Maybe you would have been happier.
I've been happy. At least I think I have.
I've tried very hard.
I know. I have had satisfaction from my work, love from my friends. And yet, Nell, we're so alone, you and I. Sometimes I have a vivid sense of being a single atom in this whole universe without any other atom traveling the same orbit. It's such a vast loneliness.
Yes, Ben. I know.
There are 100 generations from Abraham to us. Now it comes to a stop. Oh, you're crying, Nell. Don't cry. It isn't your fault. It isn't anybody's fault.
There is no need to weigh the balance of blame and innocence. There is only the necessity to find the courage to affirm life and accept death. In 1929, his sister Nell died, and he was more alone, a single atom in a universe grown vaster. Perhaps he worked harder afterward. One day he fell unconscious in a street and awoke in a hospital.
I'm sorry, Doctor. I've caused you so much trouble.
Oh, you don't have to apologize.
It was so foolish, a fainting spell.
It was not a fainting spell, Judge Cardozo. It's your heart.
Oh, I can see from your face that you're going to give me instructions.
No, orders. You'll have to go easy for a while.
I'm afraid that's impossible, Doctor.
Then you'll simply have to do the impossible.
Oh, you don't understand. The court is in session, and there are so many things I must do.
There were many things, and he recovered to do them. He lectured at Yale and Columbia. He served with the Jewish Education Association, the American Jewish Committee. In 1932, when the threat of Hitlerism was about to burst into reality, he came to his friends and said,
Rabbi, I have been a Zionist for a good many years, in a quiet sort of way.
If it's your way, Judge Cardozo, that's what we want.
Rabbi, I think a little less quiet is in order now.
One day that year, there was considerable noise on a dock in New York. A German ship had arrived. As the Nazi sailors came down the gangplank, they were met by an anti-Nazi demonstration. There was some violence. When the police came, they arrested a number of the demonstrators. Like many others, Cardozo and his friends were greatly concerned.
Ben, the magistrate acquitted the demonstrators.
Yes, I've seen the newspapers, Philip.
Yeah, it's good news.
Is it? The men were guilty of disorder and violence.
Against Nazis. We'll show the world what America thinks about Hitlerism.
To me, it seems like a strange way to show what democracy means.
If I didn't know you so well, Ben, I'd say that you were concerned about the Nazis.
The Nazis stand for everything evil and ugly and inhuman, and they must be fought. But in fighting them, we must take care not to imitate them. No, Philip, I'm not concerned about them. I'm concerned about justice, about being just.
Well, so am I, but after all...
Philip, is justice only for the virtuous, for the well-intentioned?
I didn't say that.
Or is there one justice for them and another kind for the Deuteronomy? Judge righteously between a man and his brother and a stranger that is with him. Philip, we must judge righteously.
In
It was said that he had a truly judicial mind. I think it is also true that he hated ugliness and inhumanity, and that he had the piety that springs from respect for his fellows. Therefore, he gained for himself universal respect. In February of 1932, a rumor came to the attention of his friends.
This is not an ordinary rumor, Ben.
No?
No, it's unconfirmed, but by the most reliable sources.
What is it, Philip?
The president is considering you for the Supreme Court. Did you hear what I said?
It's too late.
Ah, you're talking nonsense. You're only 60.
62, but that's not what I mean. 10 years ago, I would have been happy at the opportunity. I've changed since Nell died.
Ben, you owe it to yourself.
Besides, I've been in the Court of Appeals at Albany for 18 years. My colleagues are my friends. I'd be almost afraid to begin over again in Washington.
You're making excuses as if you're trying to hide the real reason.
There would be a public hearing in the Senate.
Well, what of it, Ben?
Rationally, logically, nothing, Philip. But to open my life in public, I seem to have a special dread of it.
It's completely irrational.
Oh, that's what I said, but it's a feeling I've had all my life.
Ben, knowing your reputation, who could oppose the appointment?
Suppose it were only a few. Suppose only one.
Would that trouble you so much?
It would trouble me greatly, Philip. I don't want to leave the Court of Appeals. But tell me something.
Yes?
How do you say no to the President of the United States?
Mr. President, I've come to urge you to nominate Cardozo.
You are not the first, Senator.
May I ask if you've made a decision?
If it were not for one factor, I would have no hesitation.
Mr. President, I assure you it is an irrelevant factor.
I could resent your misunderstanding, Senator. You should know that I will not be deterred by what the prejudiced and the intolerant may think. There is another problem. Cardozo is from New York. There are two other New Yorkers in the Supreme Court.
Judge Cardozo doesn't belong to any one state. His contributions to the law make him a national jurist. Mr. President, John Adams' administration is remembered largely for his appointment of Justice Marshall. It may be that yours will be additionally distinguished by the nomination of Cardozo.
Senator, will you do something for me?
Of course.
Will you ask my secretary to get Judge Cardozo on the telephone?
The public hearing of the Senate Judiciary Committee is now resumed. The witnesses already heard have been unanimously in favor of the nomination. In view of the large number still desiring to be heard, the committee requests that testimony be submitted in written form to be read into the record.
From the New York State Bar Association, Judge Cardozo is recognized by the legal profession and by the people alike as the most distinguished jurist of our age. Senator La Follette of Wisconsin, his appointment will meet with the overwhelming approval of the country.
Remaining testimony will be included in the official minutes of this hearing. The inquiry into the fitness of Benjamin N. Cardozo for appointment to the Supreme Court is hereby declared.
I demand to be heard!
Mr.
My name is Nelson.
Well, Mr. Nelson, you have had the opportunity to submit your statement in writing. If you wish, you may still do so.
I insist on testifying in person.
Is it necessary, sir? The opinions we have heard are unanimous as regards Judge Cardozo's qualifications. Can you add anything?
I can say what no one has dared to say. I say that Cardozo should not be permitted to sit on the bench of any court in the country.
That is a serious charge, Mr. Nelson.
It's the truth, Senator.
Are you prepared to give supporting evidence?
I'm no lawyer. I'll tell you what I know.
The committee will hear you.
Many years ago, a case was brought to the Court of Appeals of New York. A man convicted of embezzlement.
Don't be mysterious. What man?
I'll tell it my way, Senator. Cardozo, as chief judge, accepted perjured testimony and refused to listen to the facts.
The man's name, Mr. Nelson.
The man was sent to prison. I was the man. I was framed by Benjamin Cardozo. And that's the man you want to put in the Supreme Court.
Mr. Nelson. Mr. Nelson, you have done this committee a service.
Thank you, Senator.
Perhaps not in the way you think. What you have told us is not new. It is a matter of public record.
But nobody dared to say it.
If nobody had said it, there might always have been doubts about the character of Benjamin Cardozo and about the validity of his nomination.
I don't understand.
Your testimony has contradicted none of the previous witnesses as regards his fitness for the Supreme Court. This hearing is closed.
I, Benjamin Nathan Cardozo, do solemnly swear that I will administer justice without respect to persons and do equal right to the rich and to the poor.
On March 14th, 1932, he took the oath of office as Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. And it seemed to me that though he said the traditional words, they might have been his own.
Agreeably to the Constitution and laws of the United States, so help me God.
These were momentous days, the beginning of the New Deal, when NRA, AAA, and other alphabetical agencies were multiplying and disintegrating, when society was moving in a dozen new directions. Long before others were aware of it, Cardozo saw and understood.
We live in a world of change. If a body of law were in existence adequate for the civilization of today, it could not meet the demands of tomorrow.
He joined in the work of the court and often found himself in agreement with the liberal wing.
So ordered by the court, Justice Brandeis, Stone, and Cardozo dissenting.
But often there was no dissent, for his sympathy and understanding made it possible for him to influence his colleagues and the law itself more than other, perhaps more brilliant judges. For 6 years, he lived quietly, a little lonelier than usual, working hard, until one day in 1938, he had another attack.
Has the doctor gone, Philip?
Yes, Ben.
Then give me my briefcase, please.
Now, he said you weren't to try to work.
I know, but there's some work I must finish.
Not now. There's plenty of time.
Is there?
Now, listen to me, Ben. I'll tell you what I told Chief Justice Hughes when he asked about you. The doctor said that if you take care of yourself, you'll be up and about very soon.
That's the doctor's opinion, is it?
It is.
And that's what you told Hughes.
I did.
Philip, will you give the Chief Justice a message from me?
Of course.
Then tell him I file a dissenting opinion.
His life was not dissent, but affirmation. He judged without exalting himself and sentenced without condemning. As understanding is greater than the letter of the law, so the law became in his hands something closer to justice.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Judge Charles D. Breitel, Justice of the Supreme Court of the State of New York. Mr. Justice Breitel.
Today's excellent dramatic program gives us a glimpse of the essence of Cardozo. It does not give us, and nothing brief can, the measure of the impact of the man and his work upon the law and courts of this state and nation. We men of the long robe, as lawyers were once called, presently link three names as those of the great judges of our time, Holmes, Brandeis, and Cardozo. To draw comparisons among these three, except to say that they were great, calls for a heartier blasphemy than I can command. But this I will venture to say. In a very special sense, Cardozo was the greatest of judges. This is so in a special sense that is deeply rooted in the ancient traditions of Judaism. For there the emphasis was so greatly on the personality of the judge. So here I am not referring to Cardozo's learning, his gift of expression, his great wisdom, and his many other qualities with which he was so richly endowed. The special sense has its reference to that particular qualification of integrity, good in all men, but an absolute requirement of integrity in its completest intellectual and moral sense that a great judge must have. For this alone makes palatable the setting up of one man above his fellows to sit in judgment upon them. Ancient Jewish literature gave an emphasis to judges and their qualifications that we find unmatched elsewhere. Even in the old theocratic state, the judges collectively had a responsibility unequaled in any modern form of government. Cardozo was a modern judge. His historical roots were just as clear as the advanced positions he took in making our law vital and attuned to our society. None knew it better than he, that the tree may reach the higher because its roots go deeper. Many say that ours is a land ruled by laws and not by men. That is true in a limited sense only. We shall continue to be ruled by laws and not by men, so long as we continue to produce men like Cardozo to interpret and apply the laws. So it is timely in so many ways that we look to Cardozo for the integrity and the courage and the faith that makes possible this republic and this democracy, built of laws made by men, so that the children of men may live in happiness and freedom.